WTFR. Health will never be the same. You're listening to White Wellness with your host, Tabitha.
Vegetable, the plant fennel produces an anise-flavored white bulb that is delicious both raw and cooked. As a tea herb, you'll enjoy the tiny yellow seeds. So right here, they're saying in this book, it says, Man is not only the subject of the medicine, but contributes with his body to the materia medica. So they eat a little bit of it unfermented, like regular tofu, but that they eat this fermented tofu, which I saw a picture of it. It kind of had a more of a gelatinous texture and a kind of like a darker kind of tan color. Ovulation rates differ by race, as does the frequency of twins. Black women tend to have shorter cycles than white women do. They often produce two eggs in a single cycle.
And now here's your host, Tabitha.
Greetings and good evening, and greetings and good morning. This is Tabitha, and you are listening to White Wellness. Hello, everybody. So this is the third show over at WTFR, and for tonight, to start out, I want to just go through over a couple of news stories I've found throughout the week that pertain to wellness or lack of wellness, and I suppose lack of wellness would be best described as degeneracy. So first, I want to go over this little clipping about the decline in millennial health. And this is interesting because it appears that millennials, who are just a little bit younger than the generation that came before, which is the Generation X, are having more health problems than the prior generation. And this is being blamed on technology, actually. And I'm seeing here in the chat, people are saying that a boomer is anyone over 35. That's not true. That's certainly not true. I'm over 35 and I'm not a boomer. I'm part of the Gen X generation. As far as I know, a boomer is someone who's born between 1946 and 1964. So definitely not a boomer. That just seems to be a word that people are throwing around these days, like autistic or even pedophile. So yeah. So here is the article. It's titled Alarming Decline in Millennials' Health. Millennials, the first generation to grow up using cell phones, are experiencing an unprecedented decline in their health when they reach their late 20s. On April 24, 2019, the American Health Insurance Association, Blue Cross Blue Shield, released a report titled The Health of Millennials. It showed not only that the health of this generation takes a sharp decline beginning at age 27, but also that the prevalence of many medical conditions rose precipitously among millennials in just 3 years. And oftentimes these time frames for what, you know, defines a generation tend to differ. I just want to get a bit of an idea of the millennial generation. I kind of have somewhat of an idea. I know it begins in the early 80s. Okay, let's see. Wikipedia is saying 81 to 96 is millennial. And then after that, I guess, would be Generation Z. So yeah, let's see. Millennials, 1981 to 1996. So millennials would be between 22 and 37 years old. And then anyone who's born post-millennial, I guess, 1997 to present would be Generation Z or even Generation Alpha. Okay. Back to the article. The prevalence of 8 of the top 10 conditions among all millennials showed a double-digit increase in 2017 as compared to with 2014. Major depression increased 31%. Hyperactivity increased 29%. Type 2 diabetes increased 22%. Hypertension increased 16%. Psychoses increased 15%. High cholesterol increased 12%. Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis increased 10%, and substance use disorder increased 10%. The decline in millennials' health from 2014 to 2017 was not due to their being 3 years older. The report also compared the health of millennials who were 34 to 36 years old in 2017 to the health of Gen Xers who were 34 to 36 in 2014. At the same age, 34 to 36 year old in 2017 had 37% more hyperactivity, 19% more diabetes, 18% more major depression, 15% more Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, 12% more substance abuse disorder, 10% hypertension, and 7% more high cholesterol than the 34 to 36 year olds had in 2014. When researchers looked at all health conditions, they found that 34 to 36 year olds in 2017 had a 21% increase in cardiovascular conditions, a 15% increase in endocrine conditions, and an 8% increase in other physical conditions compared to 34 to 36 year olds in 2014. So that's the end of that tidbit right there. I see some people there in the chat. Hello, Jim Fire. And Sean is saying, I think it's a mixture of things, technology, shit in the food and water, GMO, which changes our very genome, vaccines. Yeah, absolutely. It's a toxic cocktail. And it just seems that the younger you are when you, fall into this toxic soup, the easier it is to get affected by it. But just, kind of alarming to see how much it can affect a generation just so quickly. And I also make note of 1996 being the last year that one can be born as a millennial. That was the year that I know here in the States, in America, where the first GMO tomato, the Flavor Saver, hit the market. So something else interesting to kind of weave into that whole, end of that generation right there. So that was that for that piece. Yeah, damn shots and toxic soup. Absolutely. Yeah, we're being bathed in it. Totally. Every piece of it is kind of like a bathing or a shower and all these things. So next, I wanted to talk about something that I've talked about before in the past, which is always worth mentioning again, because this really seems to be something that is affecting people on a large scale. And that would be young people who are doing what is called detransitioning. Young people who have thought they were trans, and I believe that trans is just gender dysphoria. Trans is just kind of like the new speak word for it. And these people are now detransitioning. Some of them have taken hormones. Maybe some of them have done even worse by, engaging in surgery to amputate body parts. But a lot of people went through with this and they realized that it was really just a phase. And something else that's an interesting thing to intertwine into here is that a lot of young women who are suffering from eating disorders, which can be intertwined with feelings of body dysmorphia and not really kind of seeing yourself the way you really are, that is now being tied into the whole gender dysphoria thing. So this is a pretty pretty crazy thing that's happening on kind of a mass scale. And also a lot of these young women who would maybe years ago or even decades ago possibly be lesbians, they're now all trans all of a sudden. There's no teenage lesbians anymore. Not that I think that that is a healthy alternative, but I think one can easily see that being a lesbian is less disordered than thinking that you're a man and wanting to chop off your body parts. So here is this article. Hundreds of young trans people seeking to return to original sex. A woman who detransitioned in 2018 says there are many people who have had gender reassignment surgery who wish they hadn't. And this has to be one of the most heartbreaking things I think that's currently happening in this world. This is just this is a form of population control, genocide, white genocide, just really abysmal at all levels. And here is the article. Hundreds of young transgender people are seeking to return to their original sex, a woman who is setting up a charity has told Sky News. And this comes out of an outlet from the UK, actually. Yeah, North England. The number of young people seeking gender transitioning is at an all-time high, but we hear very little, if anything, about those who may come to regret their decision. Charlene Evans, 28, was born a female, but identified as male for nearly 10 years before detransitioning. There is currently no data to reflect the number who may be unhappy in their new gender or who may opt to detransition to their biological sex. Charlie detransitioned and went public with her story last year, and she said she was stunned by the number of people she discovered in similar position. I'm in communication with 19 and 20-year-olds who have had full gender reassignment surgery, wow, and wish they had not, and their dysphoria hasn't been relieved, and they don't feel better for it, she says. They don't know what their options are now. Charlie says she has been contacted by hundreds of people seeking help, 30 people alone in her area of Newcastle. I think some of the common characteristics are that they tend to be around their mid-20s, they're mostly female, and mostly same-sex attracted and often autistic as well. And of course, this young generation is more vaccinated, more docile, more likely to fall for bad dietary advice, just pretty much more controllable. She recalls being approached by a young girl with a beard who hugged her after giving a public talk, who explained she was a detransition woman too. She said she felt shunned by the LGBT community for being a traitor, so I felt I had to do something. And this trend of kind of leaving that community and being treated with utter vitriol, you'll see the same thing in the vegan community, same type of disgusting behavior. When someone leaves their church, they spit on them. Charlie is now launching a charity called the Detransition Advocacy Network, with their first meeting set to be held in Manchester at the end of the month. And that is pretty much, yeah, just Sky News went to meet this person and contacted them for the network for help. Oh, yeah, there's actually a little bit more. Let's see. So here is someone else. Ruby is now 21 and first began identifying as a male at age 13. After taking testosterone, her voice got a lot deeper. She grew facial hair and her body changed. She had been planning to have surgery to remove her breasts. That's known as a mastectomy this summer. By the way, here in America, the disgusting company Starbucks will pay for a young woman to remove her breasts. Yeah, they'll actually pay for it. Let's check the chat right here. Toxics who've never got vaccinated. The first time I was sick in many years. Yeah, it's this whole flu shot thing. Ugh, I see people now like it's coming up on those little like things when you go to the store and you're putting your credit card through it, the credit card processor. It came up on that thing. Would you like to get a flu shot? Everywhere you go, they're asking you. I think I even saw somewhere they were giving like a coupon or something like that to people who were going to subject themselves to that filth. Disgusting. So this woman was planning to have her breasts removed this summer. However, she voiced growing doubts she had been harboring and made the decision to come off of testosterone and detransition to identify as a female. I hate this language too, to identify as a female. No. She decided to stop taking this toxic soup of testosterone, which is unnatural for a woman to take. And she basically went back to her natural form, which is a female. I hate this, this disgusting newspeak. It's nauseating. I didn't think any change was going to be enough in the end, and I thought it was better to work on changing how I felt about myself and changing my body. That's fantastic advice. Yeah, work on the inside. There's really nothing you can do, whether it means cutting off your breasts or getting like a G cup. Like, that's not going to really change your feeling deep inside. So that's really where it comes from. I've seen similarities in the way I experience gender dysphoria and in the way I experience other body image issues. Well, there it is very clearly. I wonder how many young people, especially young ladies who have not even had the opportunity to, you know, meet a mate and reproduce, are going to be doing stuff like this and completely messing up any chances of reproduction in the future. Ruby explained she also has had an eating disorder, but does not feel that issue was explored in therapy sessions she went to her gender identity services. Well, of course not. I've read stories before where a person was approved for a mastectomy after one visit with a gender identity psychologist. So these people don't give a shit. They're just in it for the money. They're on the dole. When I was at my gender clinic to get referred for hormones, we had a session where I went over my mental health issues and told them about my eating disorder, and they didn't suggest that it could be connected to my gender dysphoria. For everyone who has gender dysphoria, whether they are trans or not, I want there to be options for us, because I think there is a system of saying, okay, here's your hormones, here's your surgery, and off you go. Yeah, that's not going to help anybody. That's just going to break people more than they already are broken. The Tavistock and Portman NHS Trust, Tavistock is a disgusting organization, transhumanist. They offer gender identity services for people under 18 and patients as young as 3 or 4. Of course, they'd want to confuse someone at a young age, the youngest age possible. They now have a record number of referrals and see 3,200% more patients. Oh my God, 3,200% more patients than they did 10 years ago, with the increase for girls around 5,337%. That's astounding. This is a genocide. This is stunting the next generation, even the opportunity to have children. What's going to happen when these people detransition and then they have to have all their future reproductive rights handed over to Zog, handed over to the state, right? This is exactly what they want. With referrals at a record high, it suggests cases of detransition will rise too. Of course, and this all just creates an industry too. Every little piece of this creates an industry along the way. In a statement, a trust spokesperson said, decisions about physical interventions made in our care are arrived at after a thorough exploration process. While some of our patients may decide not to pursue physical treatment or drop out of treatment, the experience of regret described here is rarely seen. That is a false statement. That is a lie. I've read numerous stories of people of all ages, of both male and female, biological, gender, or sex, who have detransitioned. So that is a bold, disgusting lie. Gender transition has positive outcomes for many people. Okay, I don't believe that. How could lopping your body up into pieces be positive unless you were still living in that frame of mental illness? So that's pretty much the end of that article. Yeah, I don't know if further research is needed. I think we need to live in a society where this isn't even an option. That's what we need. Further research to find out how degenerate this is. No. We need this to completely be wiped from the society. That's how I feel about that. Higher suicide rates. Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Higher pretty much everything. Higher risk for a lot of health problems as well. It's crazy. Heard the news about the doctors being sued for not being able to make male or female classification. I don't doubt it. I've heard that in Canada, you can get your child taken away if you don't use the child's proper pronoun. Yeah, this stuff is just absolutely insane, truly insane. It's not helping anybody. It's helping, you know, the controllers. It's not helping, you know, any normal person really at all. Okay, so that's all I really had to say about that. But that type of information gets me very upset and angry, because it seems to be so prevalent, and it's like watching someone die in a lot of ways, because you're seeing them kind of lose the first thing they ever were. The first thing you ever are in this world is your race, and the second thing you are is your sex, right? So it's really attacking someone at their root, and I find that to be very sad and very disgusting. All right, so that's really all I had to say about that. Move on to a bit more positive material. And I wanted to share a recipe for a morning latte. And this does not have to have caffeine. So for those out there, listeners who are not into caffeine, for whatever the reason may be, I'm going to give a recipe out for kind of an herbal latte, which I enjoy most mornings. I really like to have this. It's tasty, and I like the way it makes me feel. But there are numerous beverages around this time of year, or at least where I live. I know everyone has different seasons throughout the year, but right now it's coming into the autumn here in the northeast of America, here in New York. And some of the nice beverages that are seasonal around these times are things like mulled wine, where wine is stewed with different types of fruits and spices. Matcha latte, of course, those are kind of a year-round type of thing now, with the matcha craze being quite a thing for the last couple of years. Of course, matcha being a traditional Japanese ingredient, but it's really gotten hot in the last couple of years. Hot cocoa, of course, a classic, or hot chocolate, which is a bit different than hot cocoa. Hot chocolate's actually a thicker beverage than a hot cocoa. I learned that recently. I thought they were kind of interchangeable, but they are not. Hot cider, of course, that's a wonderful beverage too. A little high in sugar, maybe one could cut that with a little bit of water or tea to make it less sweet. A turmeric latte, another wonderful beverage that's caught on as of late, is kind of a hip and trendy thing, much like matcha. Also a chai latte. Chai's been something that's been popular for a while too, using a lot of Indian spices like cardamom, cinnamon, black pepper, things like that. And of course, cappuccino, which is a classic coffee drink, but you could make cappuccino with other things, not using coffee if you did not want to use coffee. Oh yeah, hot cider and cinnamon is great. I like it too. Even pieces of like dried lemon or lemon peel, you can add that to the mix as well. I'm seeing a video here that was posted by Lip McNip. I want my sex back. Transgender people who regretted sex change, changing sex. I saw this documentary, actually. I think I might have watched it twice. It's about three men, if I remember correctly. And they had all basically pretended or thought that they were women, gone through with this. I think cut their penises off, as horrific as that is and as that sounds. And they were all regretful. And some of them actually still had women in their life. I guess that's a good thing. But yeah, just really, really sad. Really, really sad that someone could feel so low about themselves that they would do something like that. Yeah. So back to the beverages. So yeah, there's a lot of wonderful choices for having beverages. And everything I mentioned, with the exception of, actually, wait, no. Chai usually has tea, so that would be caffeine. But you could make chai with like a rooibos tea to make it non-caffeinated. Same with the cappuccino. Matcha latte, well, you really can't make that not caffeinated. And hot cocoa, of course, you know, chocolate's got a little bit of caffeine in it. But anyway, the recipe that I wanted to give out is for what I call a morning latte. This makes one serving. I recommend making it in a glass blender because you don't want to be pouring hot liquid into a plastic blender. You can just do something simple and buy the brand Oster. It's kind of an old school blender brand. You can just buy one of those blenders, a glass one that comes with all these different cool attachments for like 50 or 60 bucks. That's what I recommend. That's what I have. If you don't have that, I'd recommend getting that. Of course, you can make this beverage without it, but it won't be nearly as like foamy or frothy. So I recommend getting the blender. So what you do is you take 1.5 cups of hot water. And I'll post this tomorrow whenever the show gets posted. I can post this in the comments, or Sean can post it in the show description. So here is the recipe. You take 1.5 cups of hot water that you boil in your kettle. Use a good water, like a good, you know, a good filtered water, reverse osmosis, something like that. So take that and put that, actually first, forget about that. Don't put the water in first. You want to put the ingredients in first and then put the water on, and that helps with the buzzing. Otherwise, if you put the powder on top of the water, it's going to be not blended as well. I see Set Free saying he's got three kinds of blenders. Yeah, I've got quite a few myself. I've got quite a couple of food processors, quite a few spice mills. I keep one spice mill that I solely use for grounding coffee beans. The other one is used for grinding flours and oatmeal and spices and things like that, so the coffee one doesn't get like the other one, you know, all coffeeed up. So what you do, if you're using matcha, you want to add a teaspoon of matcha, and then you want to add a half teaspoon of ashitaba, which is another type of herb, I guess you'd say. I've talked about it, I guess, before in some of my old shows. It's one of my favorite herbs. I really like the benefits of it. It's good for cleansing the blood, so I recommend that. And then you want to add 1/2 teaspoon of a medicinal mushroom powder, which I will get into at a later point too, talking about the benefits of mushrooms. I recommend something like a reishi, cordyceps, lion's mane, depending on what you like. Then you want to add 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla extract, a little pinch of Celtic sea salt, 1 teaspoon of sweetener. I happen to like maple sugar, but you could use coconut sugar. You could use, what else? Honey. Things like that, whatever you think is cool. And then 1 tablespoon of coconut milk powder, coconut milk, or coconut cream. The coconut cream will make it a little bit creamier. And then you want to pour in your 1.5 cups of hot water. And then you just buzz this up for less than 10 seconds. It really doesn't need much time at all. And then you just pour this into a cup, and it has like a nice foamy head. And this is a really nice beverage to have in the morning with, you know, with your breakfast. Nice to have with breakfast. Yeah, you can do stevia. Totally. I'm not really too into stevia from a taste perspective or a health perspective. I don't know if it's really the safest sweetener out there. I would say if you wanted to make it calorie free or like low sugar, I'd recommend, what's it called? Lancanto. I can post a link for this. This is probably, I think, the best, non-glycemic or low glycemic sweetener. Let's see where it is. Here it is. Yeah, it's made from monk fruit, which is a fruit that grows, I think, only in China. It's called Lo Huan, and it's cut with erythritol. So you don't want to use this in too much quantity because these sugar alcohols can cause loose stool and things of that nature. So I'm just going to post this right here. I've used this before. It's called Lecanto. They make two. They make a golden one that's kind of like a brown sugary. I prefer that one because it has more of a kind of a warm, toasty flavor. And then they make a white one as well, which is kind of more of an all-purpose. And they make a maple syrup, and they make a powdered one that's kind of like a powdered sugar. They also actually make a matcha latte mix as well, and a lot of other cool things. But I would recommend that if somebody was looking to sweetness and make it like a low sugar thing, I'd recommend the Lecanto over the stevia. Yeah, it's a newer product. It's newer on the market. It's gotten a lot more popular because of the ketogenic diet. I think that's kind of like fueled a lot of this. Yeah. So that's all I wanted to say about that morning latte, but I recommend it. I definitely think it's something that's nice, especially if someone's looking for something like warm and ritualistic in the morning. Because I know coffee for a lot of people is not just the caffeine, it's the ritual that's attached to it. That's true for tea. That's true for a cigarette. Alcohol, really a lot of stuff is the ritual as well as the feeling. So maybe something like this would be a good liaison into healthier living, or maybe you do a caffeine beverage on certain days and then you have this on other days. So just something to think about. So now I wanted to talk a little bit about tranny burgers. So first we were talking about trannies, and now I want to talk about tranny burgers, or that's what I call them. People call it a vegan meat or plant meat, or I don't like to use those words. Those are Zog words. I'd rather use my own language personally. But now this tranny burger has made its way over to McDonald's, because a lot of the burger chains now are kind of sliding in this fake meat, you know, this tranny meat into their menu in a way where a lot of people don't even know what's on the menu. And I kind of have this prediction that in the next couple of years, this is all you're going to be able to get at these fast takeaway restaurants. It's only going to be tranny meat. Not to say the meat they were using was top quality. I'm sure it was low quality, concentrated animal feeding operation, you know, battery type of farm meat. It was probably shitty grain-fed meat, but still certainly better than this disgusting hockey puck sludge. Definitely better than that. I mean, you know, both things, neither one is better, but neither one is optimal, but one of them is slightly better than the other. So now McDonald's is launching a burger with vegan Beyond Meat. So Beyond Meat is one of these big tranny burger companies. The other big one is Impossible Foods. Yeah, really, really gross stuff. Oh, loose stool. That's pretty funny. That's funny. A tranny burger. Yeah, that's the only thing you can really call them. I mean, they're just a disgusting, a complete abomination from a culinary perspective, really from every perspective. It's vile. So here's a little bit about this. And this comes from Live Kindly, which is a very pro vegan outlet, kind of has a very transhumanistic feel to it. They're pro degeneracy, pro homo, pro LGBTP, pro just pro filth. McDonald's is launching a meat-free burger made with Beyond Meat's patty at 28 of its Canada locations. The new burger is called the Beyond Meat PLT. It is short for plant, lettuce, and tomato. McDonald's describes it as juicy, delicious, and perfectly dressed. It contains no artificial flavors, colors, or preservatives. That's their way of saying it contains GMO wheat and non-heme iron, and it will kill your digestion, but we're telling you this because we want you to focus on that and not what it's really doing. Classic technique. McDonald's has a proud legacy of fun, delicious, craveable food, and now we're extending that to a test of a juicy, plant-based burger, says McDonald's Vice President of Global Menu Strategy. We've been working on our recipe, and now we're ready to hear feedback from our customers. I wouldn't be caught dead eating in a McDonald's. No disrespect to anybody who still goes there, but personally, I would not be caught dead there. The Beyond Meat PLT will be available for 12 weeks to test consumer response. And I heard a couple of weeks ago that KFC launched tranny chicken over at their place, which is a bit of a deviation because all this tranny meat tends to be beef, analogous to beef or red meat. But the line out of this KFC to get the tranny meat was supposedly all the way down. Like people were lining up to eat fake meat. Unbelievable. All right, be right back.
Obscenity invades every area of our lives, however much we do to try and repel it. Fear of the obscene is expressed in networks of vigilance, such as campaigns for public morality. Legislation about obscenity persists, and calls for its extension are frequent. But the fascination of the forbidden is irresistible, and obscenity can seem the nucleus of English eloquence. The English were once labelled les gardames by the French. Since the 1960s, they have been les fuck-offs. And among the many inventions of English-speaking culture is that snarling expletive, a two-word anthem for the Anglosphere. The Language Wars by Henry Hitchings. In the sunshine of your love. I'm with you, my love. The light shining through one. I'm with you, my love. It's the morning, just we two. I'll stay with you, darling, now. I'll stay with you till my seas are dried up. I've been waiting so long.
And we are back. And I was just talking about McDonald's adding tranny meat to their menu. So I will continue the article. The announcement follows the success of the Impossible Burger at Burger King restaurants in the U.S. Sales rose by 28% in April, the month that Burger King welcomed its meat-free Whopper. This is 26% higher than the sales boost experienced by U.S. locations of McDonald's during the same period. Being of service to McDonald's has been a central and defining goal of mine since Beyond Meat over a decade ago, said the founder and CEO of Beyond Meat. It comes after a long and productive collaboration to make a delicious plant-based patty that fits seamlessly into McDonald's menu, and we're thrilled with the outcome. Vegan food at McDonald's. The new Beyond Meat PLT is a first for McDonald's North America, but other locations of the fast food chain have tapped into the growing vegan movement. McDonald's Germany launched its first vegan burger earlier this year, the Big Vegan TS, which features Nestle's plant-based Incredible Burger, boasts 17 grams of protein, the same amount as the chain's traditional beef burgers, TS. I think of the phrase or the word transsexual when I hear TS. So when I hear Big Vegan TS, like, that just sounds like the title of like a really degenerate porn. Yeah, just gross. McDonald's restaurants in the UK now offer a vegan Happy Meal option. Oh, that's wonderful. Diners can choose to have the kids meal with the veggie split pea based gougins. Gougins, I don't even know what that is. Wow, that one's stumped me, and I've been in the food world for decades. Gougins, what the hell is a gougin? Gougin, a thin strip of food, usually fish or chicken. Okay, it's a gougin. Okay, I think it's a French word. Got it. Okay. And a dairy-free pesto sauce. Well, you can make pesto dairy-free. By the way, the French make a pesto called pistou, which is always dairy-free, so... yeah, not new. McDonald's said the move was motivated by a poll which found that 33% of its customers wanted more meat-free options from the chain. McDonald's Finland introduced a vegan burger option to all of its 65 locations across the country late last year. The Beyond Meat PLT will be available in 28 McDonald's restaurants in southwestern Ontario, Canada from September 30th. So that was the end of that article. And notice that this tranny meat burger is coming to all these, you know, white countries, or, you know, still white majority, you know, fading, it seems like, with all these invaders. But yeah, Germany, Finland, Canada. So yeah, disgusting. nobody eat this, and please pass it on to others to not eat this. This is filth. It's unnatural, and it's terrible for you. Pesto by nature is dairy-free. Yeah, I mean, you can put Parmesan in pesto, but you don't have to. You could use miso. You can just leave it out. Gay meat. Yeah, essentially. There's no doubt in my mind that all this tranny stuff is, you know, all this tranny food and all this unnatural food is fueling homosexuality, fueling transgenderism, and just fueling dysgenia and degeneracy, clearly. Okay, so that's all I had to say about that tranny burger. And now I wanted to mention, what else do I want to mention right here? Oh, yes, I think I'll go over this. Kind of just switch up the pace for a little bit for a moment. Yeah, basil, olive oil, and pine nuts. Yeah, that's what pesto is, essentially. A little bit of garlic. I actually like a garlic-free pesto. I'm not a big fan of raw garlic. I used to, I guess, like it more, but these days I like it more cooked, whether it be sautéed or roasted. So I usually do it garlic-free. The same thing when I make a guacamole, I do that garlic-free too. So I wanted to read this little piece that I've, you know, kept for a little bit. I keep good files and a lot of these things, you know, for my own enjoyment, but also so I can share it on occasions like this. And I want to read a piece from a man named Yost Turner, a man that is now deceased. He was considered, well, I guess you'd consider him a National Socialist. He was a member of a white folk community called the NS Kindred. So here's a little bit about Yost Turner, if people are not familiar with him. He, how old would he be? I guess you'd say he'd be an older boomer if he was still alive. And it's very difficult to find a lot of his work, a lot of his pieces. I think he's one of the few authentic people, you know, in this arena. And I really like most of the things that I've read that he's written. So here's a little bit about his background. The following was written by Yost Turner, an American Vietnam veteran who found a white folk community, the NS Kindred, in the mountains of Northern California. Yost worked briefly in the open American white nationalist, quote, movement, but he became very disillusioned with the selfish, dysfunctional people in the movement. Oh, you don't say. I've never met anyone like that in the movement just yet. Yost sought to discover and live authentic Indo-European religions as practiced by Indo-Europeans in India, Persia, which now is known as Iran, and the Greek areas of modern Turkey and Europe during the last Golden Age. And here is a piece that he wrote, and it's called White Nationalist or WN 2.0, Conscious Evolution and the Mind War. And I believe these pieces, I think these could have been written in the 90s, if memory serves me correctly. Yeah, I think it was the 90s. And I found this in a very old section, I guess almost 10 years old, over at a website called Occidental Descent, which I don't know too much about, but 2010 was when this was posted. And I'm just going to read the beginning of the post, which was made by the person who posts this, and then this this wonderful little essay by Yost Turner. I found this post about Yost Turner very interesting, namely that European pre-Christian religion has been synthesized with yogic practices. I took up yoga in 1996 because of chronic back pain as a result of sitting in a cubicle for 40-plus hours a week. Not for any spiritual reasons or any of that. However, I came to understand the spine and the brain are a single complex. The spine is the brain and vice versa. Yoga and Qigong exercises stimulate the spine and the brain. Thus, it is possible to use physical exercises to, quote, exercise the brain. Yoga practice creates calmness and thus facilitates original ideas and creativity. Original ideas are the desiderata of life itself. The greatest works of mankind have resulted from original ideas. My fundamental belief of our problems is that it is a result of the majority of the whites, quote, accepting the defaults, even as the default choices grow progressively more harmful. Of course, this acceptance of default and the creation of the defaults, high fructose corn syrup, mass media entertainment, constitute a systematic and conscious effort to maintain social control. And of course, nowadays we're dealing with more elements of social control. High fructose corn syrup and partially hydrogenated corn oil represent the control of the food supply. The current system is alarmingly bad in terms of energy efficiency, pollution of the oceans, human health, and even the long-term sustainability of the soil base. The chemically fertilized soils of the Midwest eventually become salinized and thus are no longer able to grow crops. Our field is being salted on a far larger scale than anything the Romans could have done to the Carthaginians. So that is the introduction for the piece. And now I'm going to read this piece called WN 2.0, Conscious Evolution and the Mind War. Synthetic nitrogen, when it oxidizes in the soil, becomes nitrous oxide, which is a very potent greenhouse gas. Nitrogen fertilizer becomes so cheap and is used so prolifically that it runs down the Mississippi River and into the Gulf of Mexico, where it has created this dead zone. And over time, we have found that using too much synthetic nitrogen ruins the structure of the soil. It becomes too salty and basically nothing will grow. And you have the declining yield curve that we've seen all through the Green Revolution countries because too much nitrogen in the fertilizer. The only reason for such a perverse and ultimately self-destroying food system was control. And control is in all caps. This was an American-style collectivism of the farms. They used banks and farm policy instead of NKVD commissioners with mousers, but the effect was even more insidious. Ukrainian agriculture recovered. American agriculture has not and won't for a long time. It was a purposeful destruction, and now we're in more of the throes of that currently. The masses haven't noticed it yet, because the cornucopia is still in the supermarkets. Anyone who is energy literate and agronomy literate understands that it's not sustainable. It's not a single resource crisis that threatens the cornucopia. It's three resources, any of which will take the whole thing down like a three-legged stool. Those three resources are soil, oil, and water. Extra water is required for industrial agriculture in order to dissolve the chemicals. The soil is becoming salinated and eroded, and then there's peak oil. The consciousness cultivated from yogic practices is not for soliloquism or navel gazing. It is a weapon that is meant to be used now, and now is in caps. Yoga provides, quote, basic training consciousness for the mind war. It calms the mind enough so that it can accept the frightening reality so that you don't freeze in battle. Most people have turned away from the harsh reality. The truth is just too awful. The reason to focus on the food system is that it's just a pressing issue. It doesn't seem like a pressing issue yet for those who take the evidence of the supermarket cornucopia. You have to fight the most pressing fight before you can take on higher level issues. Another high consciousness idea is that the rulers are engaged in gross mismanagement. The fact that they are salinating the soil should be sufficient evidence, but there's many, many more examples. The Pacific garbage patch, the massive obligations of Social Security, Medicare, welfare, and pensions that soon will not be funded, the hundreds of military bases around the world, the debt to China, the private automobile system, the incredible incompetence of waste and the public school system, and the malice aforethought of race-mixing propaganda. These things are all a piece. And now, well, we have the LGBTP on top of the race-mixing propaganda and the homosexuality. We have that lumped on top. What can we do in the face of gross mismanagement? Grow our own food, educate our own kids, create our own social network, tribe, nation, so as to create our own highly competent, quote, system that encompasses both government and economy. An amazing discovery in recent years is that home-rolled and open-source solutions can actually be far superior to the well-funded, official solutions created by, quote, certified experts. It's a difference between Microsoft and Linux, or the fact that homeschooled kids dominate all spelling bees and math contests. The most stark example of the superiority of the homegrown is, of course, the farmer. For millennia, before the petroleum age, farmers grew positive food, says Eroi food, E-R-O-E-I, Maybe that's an acronym. Not sure what that means. Maybe someone else possibly knows. They grew EROEI food without tax subsidies. Now with our high tax subsidized, mechanized, chemicalized agribusiness, they require 10 calories of oil to produce 1 calorie of food and billions a year in tax subsidies to boot. Those subsidies aren't going to vegetable farmers. 90% of subsidies go to corn, wheat, soybeans, and cotton. If we had horse transportation instead of being forced into the car system, the food I produce would be positive EROEI. I suspect that my use of a truck to haul manure puts me into negative EROEI, but in every other way, I produce food sustainably, non-polluting, and a superior product to agribusiness. I am pretty optimistic about the prospects for the end of the multi-cult system. What I am less optimistic about is that we will survive the gross mismanagement. The latter is the thing I truly fear, I believe. I know the multi-cult seems so strong right now, yet it rests atop the shakiest structure ever created. The thing to fear is that we will be buried under the shaky structure, like Haitians in their African-engineered structures after the earthquake. And that is the end of that piece by Yost Turner. Pretty interesting, also considering that was written a little bit ago. So, yeah, nice to see that. Yeah, corn, soybeans look nothing like they did years ago. Yeah, they've all been completely hybridized and perverted. Yeah, the food supply is really, really, really bad. Really bad. It's terrible. It really is. I mean, what really is food anymore? You didn't eat all your chicken nuggets. Oh, that's pretty funny. Yeah. That would scare the shit out of me. Yeah, I think it would, me too. That picture has to make just one of my show titles. It just has to. Okay, yeah, I will do that with the recipe. Okay, so that's all I wanted to share on that Yost Turner piece. I find some of his information very inspiring, I would say. So I will continue to read some more of his pieces that I've collected throughout the years on and other broadcasts, just to weave in that type of information, because I think he's coming from a good perspective when he speaks, and he's not a degenerate. He's not a bagel Nazi or a pretender or a piece of filth like a lot of other people are. So I like that positivity, that comes from his work. All right. So that's what I had to say about that. And now I wanted to go over a little bit about the dangers of a vegan or a vegetarian diet. I think this could be an interesting topic. I've been talking about diet for the last couple of shows that I've done, this only really being my third show. So I'm just kind of, getting into a lot of this information, which is great information. And I'm happy to be able to give this information, to convey it to other people. And I've had my own journey with food, flipping and flopping back and forth throughout the years. Of course, coming into this world with very much a plant-based or a vegetable-based ideology based on my own my own background, my own trimmings. Of course, never really being 100% on a vegan or a vegetable diet. If I really was to get technical, there was 1 month when I guess you could say I was, quote, technically vegan. I didn't refer to myself as that because I'm not really into using that word. I don't like that word personally. Remember the first time I heard it in 1996, I was pronouncing it vegan. I didn't even know. I thought it sounded, I guess, a little more appetizing with a softer G. And then when I heard it pronounced the other way, I was just like, oh, that's just like a gross sounding word. It's like a burp in a word. It's just, or a fart. It's just kind of gross, you know? So I guess to be technical, there was one time back in, 1998, where I think I went maybe a month or 3 weeks or something like that without eating, I guess, any animal products. I mean, at the time I was eating fish and eggs, but I just happened to not eat it for a couple of weeks. And then I saw this cheese sandwich in the refrigerator and I ate it, and that was the end of it. But that's like my only technicality there. But for most of my life, or for a lot of my life at a lot of different points, I followed more of a vegetable-based diet. I actually didn't taste beef, believe it or not, true story, until I was 24 years old. I was at a work party for an old place I used to work, and we went to this steakhouse, and of course I got fish. I think I got tuna that night, tuna tataki or something like that. I've got a really good memory with meals I've eaten throughout the years. It's one of those things I just have a sharpness for. But anyway, someone had ordered a T-bone or something like that. I had no idea of any of the cuts. I didn't know what bologna was. I didn't know any of this stuff. It was totally foreign to me. Always knowing a lot about food, but really never knowing really anything about meat. So someone had had a T-bone, and they had gotten it, quote, cooked, quote, well done, which I also really know what the hell well done was. So I took a little bite of it because someone said, you know, take a little bite of this and try it. And I was like, all right, fine, I'll try it. And it tasted like a shoe. It was awful. It was terrible. And I was like, ugh, I'm like, why would somebody eat this? It's disgusting. And then many years later, I finally had it properly prepared. And I was like, oh, okay, now I understand why people would, you know, gravitate towards this. But my first relationship, my first time trying it, I thought it was disgusting. Really gross. I see Sean saying, I was vegetarian for 5 months and my body started craving red meat. Something shocking. I went through the deep freezer full of red meat in no time at all. I was like a savage. I've been okay as an aquatarian, though. I can't go past a corned beef or what's known as a silver side. I can be full of food, but if someone drops a corned beef in front of me, especially slow cooked, I will scoff. I've only had corned beef, I think, once, actually. And it was recent. In the last 5 years or so, I had a traditional kind of corned beef and cabbage, like St. Patrick's Day meal with Irish soda bread. It was really good. And Tabitha, how do you know how a shoe tastes? I'm just speculating. I mean, it just had just kind of, it just didn't taste like food, I would say. Hockey puck, shoe, leather, you can call it whatever you want. It just didn't have a food taste. I did walk into that, yeah, but it just wasn't good. I mean, yeah. Certain cuts can be cooked low and slow, but something like a steak really has to be cooked, I think, with not that way. If you're going to cook it all the way through, eat another cut. Yeah, corned beef, the one time I did have it, I thought it was a really good dish. I didn't know what to expect because I really hadn't had a lot of stewed red meat dishes and things like that. But I thought it was quite good. And that's a classic dish. That's the way a lot of our ancestors ate. They would take a cut of something, depending on how much money they had or what was available, and they would just stick it in a pot to let it stretch. You know, putting a meat in a soup is a great way to stretch it for the rest of the family, adding cabbage, you know, adding maybe onions and things like that, carrots, turnips, you know, whatever was available. And that's how people would eat. That's how people ate for years. And these health problems now, everyone's now eating all these superfoods, all these, you know, healthy foods, and all of a sudden there's all these health problems. Yeah, we have, you know, worse soil, worse skies, but there's definitely ways that you can kind of work within this system, I think. And I think if you return back to what's more, you know, agreeable to one's biological system, you're always going to get better results. So with chatting any further, that was a bit about my background with some of my journeys throughout, you know, food and things like that. I've had a lot of journeys with food, you know, and I think it's a healthy thing for people to explore because people just get so rigid and so dogmatic with these things. I mean, have fun with it. Do you think our ancestors were worrying about these things, counting calories, wondering if something was gluten-free or something? I mean, come on, that's really nonsense when you think about it. If you're eating organic, wholesome food, you shouldn't have to be asking yourself if it's free of all these things. That's just, how about focusing on what it's in it? Let's say it's rich in vitamin A, you know, it's rich in, you know, in vitamin D. Let's focus on that as opposed to saying it's free of all these things. That kind of puts us into that whole scarcity mode, which is exactly what the enemy wants. They want us in scarcity mode. They want us in total scarcity mode. You know, let's get into abundant mode. Eating meat daily prevents radical veganism. Yeah, it does. Absolutely. So let's go through these myths about and truths about vegetarianism. And there's a couple of points I'm just going to go through, and then deficiencies that one can get from one of these diets. And of course, there's a big difference from someone who's just completely does not eat any of these animal foods. And even someone who eats them once a week, that's a radical difference. Completely eschewing a food as opposed to eating it once a week or occasionally once a month, whatever it may be, every day, depending on what, you know, what's suitable for whom. Huge difference than going decades, years at a time without eating it. Sean is saying, yeah, if it was grass-fed beef or chickens eating natural food out in the field, you don't have to read its hide or feathers to make sure it's free of preservatives. Yeah, that's the thing. And so much of the meat produced, at least in the States over here, is what they call CAFO, concentrated animal feeding operation, especially with the chicken. That more so than the beef. I think the beef has become more of a pastured or a grass-fed thing, and is actually there's less of a price difference between conventional CAFO beef from the market or the grocer compared to a grass-fed meat that you might get from, you know, an organic or a grass-fed purveyor, possibly online or something like that. But the difference between a CAFO chicken breast, let's say, and pastured, humongous difference. Huge, not affordable in some ways. So if someone, let's say, can't afford the pastured chicken, perhaps getting the cheaper cuts, maybe going for the drumstick or going for the thigh or going for the organs. That would be a lot more affordable than going for the breast, which is considered the prime cut, just like the filet mignon or the fillet mignon, as I like to call it, is the prime cut. And humorously or ironically, those two cuts, the chicken breast and the filet mignon, they don't have really any nutrition compared to other cuts of the meat that have, you know, the bone and all, you know, more fat in it and stuff. Like those two cuts are considered like fancy restaurant cuts, especially the filet mignon. Those are not really nutritious cuts. They're just fancy cuts. Yeah, so much food coming from Mexico. Yeah, disgusting. And actually, speaking of human poop or disease, I think one of the reasons that people sometimes will get food poisoning when they go out to a restaurant is because oftentimes the person who's cooking the food in the back of the restaurant could be from a third world country where their gut or stomach microbiome is completely foreign to you and your country. So them coming in here has a deleterious effect, not only because you don't want them here and they're sucking up all the things that we know they suck up already, but they're also coming over here with their gut microbiome, which is infesting ours and making it, you know, basically an unbalanced situation. So something to think about if someone's eating out, and also something to think about that not everybody from different countries, different races has the same bathroom habits that we do. Some people don't have you know, European bathroom habits. So something to definitely consider, especially if the person's preparing your food. So here, the myths and truths about vegetarianism. Myth: all the hungry could be fed if grazing land were cultivated for crops. Truth: only about 11% of the land on Earth can be farmed for crops, a percentage that cannot be increased with deforestation, irrigation, chemical fertilizers, or other destructive ecological practices. Myth: meat consumption contributes to famine and depletes the Earth's natural resources. Properly carried out through managed grazing, animal husbandry builds soil fertility and restores deficiencies created through grain production. 1 billion people on the Earth depended exclusively on animal foods for survival. Small mixed-use farms are the answer for personal and planetary health. Myth: livestock is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. Truth. Okay, there's our break.
Inductive logic, reasoning from specific instances to a general conclusion that is broader than what can be logically inferred from the instances. For example, our observation that the sun rose today, yesterday, and all the days we know about before yesterday gives rise to the conclusion that the sun has always come up and will continue to come up every day, even though this cannot be logically inferred from the known instances. Note: this example will not work for our readers at the North Pole. Contrast, deductive logic. From the book Plato and a Platypus Walk into a Bar by Thomas Cathcart and Daniel Klein. We'll be dancing in the moonlight.
WTFR. Summertime, the living's easy. Riding's on the microphone with Ross MG. All the people in the dance will agree that we're well qualified to represent the LBC. Me, me and Louie, we gon' run to the party. Dance till the rhythm, it gets harder. Oh, take this veil from off my eyes. My burning sun, the sun they rise. And what am I gonna be doing for a while? Said I'm gonna play with myself. Show them now we've come off the shelf. So what? Summertime, the living's easy. Riding's on the microphone with Ross MG.
And we are back, and I was talking about the myths and truths about vegetarianism, or what I like to call vegetableism. So I think I'm going to use that word from now on, because I like to use my own words, you know, fuck using words that they give us. I will use my own words. Okay, so livestock is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions. Truth, only a small percentage of atmospheric methane comes from ruminant flatulence, the largest source is the burning of fossil fuels for electricity, heat, and transportation. A surviving source is emissions from wetlands. Raising animals on pasture is the most efficient way of pulling carbon from the atmosphere and returning it to the soil. Myth. Beef production requires 2,500 gallons of water per pound of beef. This figure is widely quoted by vegetarians without supporting evidence. The beef industry estimates that a pound of beef requires 435 gallons of water, mostly for grain production to feed the animal. Pasture-raised beef requires only the water that the animal drinks, which works out to about 30 gallons of water per pound of beef, about the amount used in one shower. By contrast, it takes 500 gallons of water to grow the wheat for 1 pound of bread. Vegetableism sounds better. LOL. Yeah, I think it does. I think it almost makes it sound like a condition, right? And I'm not an anti-vegite either. I'm not anti-vegetables. Like, I know some people are just staunchly anti-vegetable. I'm not. I mean, there are certain vegetables that are more nutritious for us. There's no doubt about that. There are certain meats that are more nutritious. That's just the way it is. Certain things suit different people better. I'm a big fan of eating for your blood type and eating for your race and eating for the foods that are comfort to you when you were small, you know, or when you were, you know, young, and the foods that perhaps your mother ate when she was pregnant with you, because that all kind of makes you who you are. So I think we really have to approach it from kind of a blueprint perspective. I think that's the healthiest way to do it. Okay. Myth. Vegetarians are not involved in killing animals. Truth. About 300 animals per acre are killed for the production of grain, often in gruesome ways. Only one animal per acre is killed for the production of beef. People who fly, drive, play string instruments, talk on the phone, and take part in many other ordinary activities also rely on animal products, which are used in the manufacture of hydraulic brake fluid, plastics, waxes, glues, household items, and many other projects. Just so many angry and violent vegans out there. Well, there's actually there's a dietary reason set free as to why they are angry. Lack of cholesterol, lack of dietary cholesterol causes aggression. And also low testosterone can cause aggression as well. So I think that's why you see that kind of behavior. Like, I know many years ago, maybe like 10, 20 years ago, before this movement had really kind of taken storm, I remember hearing and seeing pictures of people who are walking around, like, let's say in a full length fur coat, and having a red paint just hurled at them by, you know, an animal activist. These people used to be called animal activists. Does everyone realize that? It's like transgenders used to be called transsexual, right? They used to be called animal activists. Now they're called vegan. So they're always using some type of language to for us to associate it in a different way. Sean is saying, it's funny because a lot of these health shows say that turkeys and chickens need to be fed pellets so that they are healthy. Yeah, okay, tell it to the wild bush turkeys up in Queensland. They are the healthiest birds I've ever seen. A mate of mine has dozens that graze on natural bush not far from his house. He used to peg one with his bow occasionally. The mainstream health shows are dickheads. Yeah, they're just in it for the wrong reasons. And sometimes I'll go to the market and I'll see they're touting on the label, vegetarian fed chicken. That's not a selling point. That's not something that you should look for when buying your food. That is what they're selling you as something that is good. And it's not, because a chicken is an omnivorous individual. A chicken in its natural environment feeds on everything, worms, insects. Like whenever it rains, I've got some birds myself. Whenever it rains, they go bonkos. They go buck wild for any of the worms in the backyard. They love it. They love when it rains and they can eat those worms. They love spaghetti because it reminds them of worms. So they'll eat their natural diet. To feed them pellets is really not good. I mean, we do supplement with a little bit of organic food for them. I think it's soy free, but the bulk of their diet is feeding on grass, feeding on bugs, things like that. They eat some of the scraps. They'll eat carrot tops. They'll eat old spaghetti, things like that. So yeah, they love their diet and they love eating fat too. They love like all types of like fatty foods and things like that. They really gravitate towards that and they're healthy. They lay like the most healthiest, beautiful eggs with a nice like goldenrod, like nice orange colored yolk. Wonderful. It's nice to have such local food. It really is. Anyone who has their own eggs or has a person in their life that has their own eggs, they know what I'm talking about. That's why they scratch the surface of the ground before they peck it. They're trying to unearth the worms and such. Yeah, absolutely. They're looking for food. It's so natural for them. If anyone ever observes an animal in nature, you just see how they just kind of fall back to doing exactly what's natural. I mean, we're kind of in a position where we're so bathed in so much toxic Judaic filth that it's kind of hard for us to know what is natural. So we need resources like this show and other things so we know the right thing to do to be able to have that relationship closer to nature, because it's easy to get lost in that when there's, you know, Talmud vision and paying bills and all these things in people's lives. Okay, so let's continue with the myths about vegetableism. The China study found that people who ate more plants were healthier. And this is a big fallacy, this China study. It's been debunked a lot. I think I'll talk about this in more depth on a future show. But this is a study that a lot of these vegetable people try to offer as a reason why the vegetable diet is a good diet. What's said in the best-selling book, The China Study, does not match the findings of the actual China Cornell Oxford study, in which researchers found no correlation with more or less disease in people eating a lot of plant foods. And I will just add right now, just a little bit about it that I know off topic, because I have been studying this or researching this as of late. This study was funded by Cornell. So of course, wouldn't it behoove a major university to fund a study that gave out information that was dastardly to one's health for control? Wouldn't that be in their interest? It certainly would. And number two is that this study goes on and on about the cancerous effects of casein. Casein, of course, being a protein in dairy. I don't know if there was any differentiation made in regards to raw or cooked, because oftentimes they'll cherry pick information, like when they do information on the bad qualities or the bad side effects of oils, it'll only be with like refined and highly cooked oils. They'll never look at like a raw olive oil or something like that. And I'm wondering with the dairy, if it was done with, you know, pasteurized, cauterized, homogenized dairy, or was it done with like a raw sheep or a goat dairy? You don't know. They cherry pick these ideas to make it look the best for them. So this book, of course, focuses on vegetableism, and they tell you that casein, the protein in dairy, which is most prevalent in cheese because cheese is just like a dairy cube, like concentrated dairy, that's going to cause cancer. But they don't tell you that the protein in wheat, gluten, that turns on the same receptors. That they don't tell you. So it's always picking information to make their points look best. I mean, that's what anyone does who's following like a religion. They try to pick all these pieces out that make it look really good, and they leave out the stuff about, you know, the genital mutilation and giving away 10% of your earnings, or, you know, putting your ass up in the air 5 times a day to pray. Like, they leave that all out. But this is definitely not advice that people want to take, this China study. And what's also ridiculous about it is, who is on a vegetable diet in China? The Chinese eat everything. The Chinese eat dog. They eat cat. They eat everything. Why are they doing a study to promote vegetabilism in China, a place where, like, they eat everything? It doesn't make any sense. But of course, yeah, like Set Free is saying in the chat, can't trust university studies or many scientists. Yeah, they're on the dole, totally. Okay, myth again. Vitamin B12 can be obtained from plant sources. Truth. True B12 is only available from animal foods. It's available from bacteria. Many vegans concede that those avoiding animal foods should play it safe and take a B12 supplement. And some of them are actually doing, they're injecting synthetic vitamins. They inject them into their butt, I believe. I've seen this sometimes with people doing this. They give themselves an injection of these supplements. Really weird, really transhumanistic, just really creepy. Oh, and actually a lot of them will, this is really disgusting too. I'm seeing piss blood, LOL, is listed right here in the chat. I'm not sure what that's in reference to. Oh, it's a little meme that somebody posted. Loving it now. Oh, gross. Yeah, that's gross. Well, anyway, speaking of urine, some people who follow a vegetable diet actually will drink their own urine to get protein. And I heard actually a while ago that in India, which is pretty much in a lacto-vegetarian country, they were thinking, Coca-Cola was thinking of actually marketing a urine soda. As vile as that sounds, they were thinking of marketing a urine soda in India, but the idea never took off, because when you're not eating enough foods that are nutrient dense, and then you're eating foods that have anti-nutrients, you get into a situation where you need to re-nutrify the system, and they were looking to do that with piss. Set Free has said, don't they? People need gelatin. Sometimes I feel like it'd be safer to eat dry dog food, even though it ain't great. It's probably better than a lot of we have on the shelf. Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if David DeRosa is listening to this broadcast and laughing himself stupid as he eats a schmacko. What's a schmacko? I don't know what that is. These people are probably eating the finest of food. You know, they push whatever they push. You got to know is not the right thing. I'm just Googling what a schmackos is. Canine confessions. Wacko. Watch the wacko things dog do for a schmackos treat. Oh, it's a dog treat. Okay. Yeah, who knows? Maybe the rich and the elite are just eating animal food. Yeah, in more ways than one. Okay, myth. Our needs for vitamin D can be met by the sunlight. Truth. We only make sufficient vitamin D from sunlight at midday during the summer months by spending a lot of time unclothed in the sun. Traditional cultures obtain this essential nutrient year-round by eating vitamin D-rich animal foods. Myth. The need for vitamin A can be met entirely from plant foods. Truth. The body converts carotenes from plants into true vitamin A very poorly. Most people cannot do this sufficiently, and some cannot do it at all. I've actually heard of some people who were in vegetableism for a while, and they were eating like tons of carrots and sweet potatoes, in some instances juicing them, and they got all types of problems because this type of vitamin A wasn't working for their body. I've read a lot of people who have had issues with this. And even though I never went full into vegetableism, I have had moments where I was doing a lot of juicing. I was actually juicing things like spinach, which is really high in oxalic acid, which is not good for you. I will talk about that in a future broadcast. I grew up with awareness for oxalates. Being raised on a macrobiotic diet, we ate kind of a low oxalate diet. But then somewhere along the way, I kind of just, you know, left those beliefs behind and focused on other stuff and kind of bought into certain things that I really didn't buy into originally, and it had deleterious effects on me eating those things. It was really making me tired, and I think it was making me itchy too. But of course, you always have this programming where you think, you know, eating anything that's green is like the most best thing in the world for you, and that's not necessarily true. Okay, Myth. Vegetarians live longer. Some do, some don't. Health-conscious vegetarians who eat pastured dairy and eggs may well live longer than omnivores eating processed, packaged, and fast foods. Analysis of studies on vegetarianism show that vegetarians have a greater all-cause death rate and even a greater death rate from heart disease. There's also higher correlation with mental illness from people who are engaged in vegetarianism. Well-fed pork fat contains more vitamin D than cod oil. Yeah, lard does. I just don't do the pork. But yeah, that is vitamin. Also, eggs are a good source of that too. I would love to hear you speak on the difference between methyl alcohol and ethyl alcohol, and if one is better than the other, because I have heard that some people make methyl alcohol drinkable, but I couldn't find if you can. Yeah, okay, Sean. Yeah, I can think about that for sure. I will add that to a show topic. Yeah, benefits of gelatin. I haven't used gelatin in a while. I've gone off and on growing up using what's called agar-agar, which is a clear like flake. It's a seaweed gelatin, but it's completely odorless and colorless. I grew up using that to make like jello or gel desserts. And then I used gelatin for a little bit, but I haven't used either. I think they both have different benefits for sure, but just I haven't used the gelatin in a bit. I actually have it in storage, but it might be something I whip out at some point and try it again. Yeah. I used to make with it that was really good. Oh yeah, this was actually fun. I would take apple juice, just simple apple juice, and I would mix that with the gelatin, and then I would pour that into a little pudding cup. Chill that, so I had like an apple jello, and then I would put on top of it like a whipped cream. It was at the time a dairy cream, but now knowing how amazing I can make my own coconut whipped cream using just coconut, like chilled coconut cream, I would just plop on like a little bit of like vanilla coconut whipped cream on top of that, and that was a really great dessert. Really good, and it looks really fancy too, so it's a great thing to serve to other people. Yeah, gelatin is the gross stuff extracted between the joints, as far as I know. Your agar-agar is the captain uses for that reason. Yeah. I also make a good lemon jello from agar-agar. Yeah. It's nice. It's nice to, you know, it's nice to have a whole little repertoire of all of these things. Okay. Myth. Vegetarianism protects against cancer. Truth. The science on this is inconsistent and contradictory at best. Vegetarians are particularly prone to cancers of the nervous system and many of their reproductive organs. Overuse of soy, which can be a staple in many vegetable diets, can cause and contribute to the growth of some cancer, particularly breast and thyroid. And of course, not all soy is created equal. Natto, which is a fermented soybean, that would be on the higher end of permissible soy. And then you have disgusting stuff like soy protein isolate, which is in protein powders and things like that, that you definitely want to stay away from. I don't think a little bit of soy in the diet is problematic. Certain people might want 100% avoid it, but I think a little bit of the fermented stuff is perfectly fine. Some of the longest lived people in the world in Okinawa, Japan, eat a fair amount of fermented soy, and they're doing quite well. I got to try the coconut cream. Yeah, I got to get a recipe together. Maybe I'll post a recipe over at the WTFR homepage. It's so good. Like, really, you won't crave whipped cream if you have the coconut cream. You just have to make sure that you chill your cans the night before. And I try not to use things in a can or a tin if I can, but just certain things. I'd rather eat coconut cream in a can or a tin than eat like the dairy milk and stuff like that. So, cause it agrees with me more. I can do a little bit of the butter and things like that, the ghee, but for the milks and stuff like that, I really like to have the coconut. Okay. Myth. Eating meat causes heart disease. Truth. Vegetarians have as much arteriosclerosis as meat eaters and high levels of homocysteine. Heart disease is associated with consumption of trans fats, refined vegetable oils and sugar, all of which come from plants. And some will say that animal foods contain a small amount of natural trans fats, that is very different than the denatured trans fats that come from the vegetable oils. Okay. Myth. Meat eating causes osteoporosis. Truth. Meat eaters do not have more osteoporosis than vegetarians. Nutrients required for healthy bones, such as vitamin D, collagen, and calcium, are either better absorbed or exclusively found in animal foods. Myth. The human body is not designed for meat consumption. Truth. Humans are equipped with a mixed feeder's teeth and digestive system. The intestinal tract of a human being is more like that of a dog than a sheep. Animals that live on plant foods do not manufacture hydrochloric acid and have 2 to 4 stomachs and a larger intestinal tract than humans. Myth. Meat putrefies in the gut. Truth. The human digestive system is perfectly designed to digest meat, starting with a stomach that produces hydrochloric acid for digesting meat proteins. Enzymes in the small intestine break down proteins into peptides, which the body absorbs through the gut wall. Myth. Eating animal flesh causes violent, aggressive behavior in humans. Truth. There is no science to support this claim. However, we do know that vegetarian diets lower serum cholesterol, and low cholesterol is associated with violence and antisocial behavior in humans, monkeys, and dogs. Myth. A vegetarian diet is safe for children. Truth. Some children can grow well on a vegetarian diet rich in dairy products from pastured cows and eggs from pastured chickens. Children brought up on a vegan diet have poorer bone health and reduced mental capacity compared to children brought up on diets containing animal foods. Rampant tooth decay in the baby teeth is common among children born to and breastfed by vegan mothers. Myth. Animal products are unhealthy because they contain numerous harmful toxins. Truth. All food contains toxins if raised with pesticides and herbicides. It is important to choose animal and plant foods that have been raised without toxic chemical inputs. The nutrients we get from animal foods, such as vitamin A and B12, sulfur and zinc, help the body detoxify. So that was the end of that piece on the myths and truths about vegetableism. And let's just check the chat. Let's see the memes. Roundup, glyphosate is a known carcinogen. Yep, 100% true. With 1 out of 2 males and 1 of 3 females expected to get cancer in America today, and the healthcare costs skyrocketing beyond our government resources, it makes no sense to spray a chemical directly involved in causing cancer on our food crops, playgrounds, sidewalks, parks, and backyards. Tell your city leaders to eliminate glyphosate. They're probably spraying it into the sky, too, with all the chemtrails or contrails. Like, yeah, it's everywhere. Like it's a perfume. Everyone's wearing it. Bayer, Monsanto, others need to shut down. The captain's wife was listening to Tabitha's show the other day. At the top of her lungs, we all hear, "Is there really 40 meters between the mouth and the anus? LOL. I started to laugh and said, "Yep, Helen." I looked it up after the show. She was spot on. Then we almost retired. Almost. Then we heard this almost retired. Wow. Yeah, there is. That is true about the length between the mouth and the anus. I remember me saying that in one of my videos. So now I want to talk a little bit about the nutrient deficiencies one can get from practicing vegetableism. The danger of vegetableism is nutrient deficiencies. Certain vital nutrients occur only in animal foods or are better absorbed from animal foods. These nutrients are particularly important for fetal development and for growing children. Vitamin A, critical for healthy eyes, skin and bones, hormone production, and immune function. Vitamin A plays a leading role in the formation of the fetus and the prevention of birth defects. Healthy populations consume amounts in the range of 20 to 30,000 IU vitamin A per day. The best sources are cod liver, oil, liver, butter, and egg yolks from grass-fed animals. Vitamin D, essential for growth, healthy bones, protection against tetany, convulsions, and heart failure in newborns, protective against type 1 diabetes, and protection against cancer, heart disease, high blood pressure, obesity, arthritis, and multiple sclerosis. Vitamin D is necessary for the function of the body's, quote, feel-good chemicals, and protects against depression. The best sources are cod liver oil, lard and other pork products, shrimp, oily fish, and egg yolks from grass-fed poultry. Vitamin K2, critical for ensuring that calcium is put into hard tissues, bones, and teeth, for protection of the soft tissues such as the arteries and kidneys from calcification. Vitamin K2 is required for the synthesis of brain cells and for reproduction. Vitamin K2 occurs in certain fermented plant foods such as natto, which is fermented soybean. But best sources in the Western diet are poultry, liver, and aged full-fat cheese, especially Gouda. Gouda is an excellent source of K2. Yeah, cod liver is pretty gross tasting. Let me share the one that I take with everyone in the chat. You can buy this and just, you know, the oil and just take it on like a spoon. I don't recommend doing that, but here it is. I buy the soft gels. Yeah. And it's a little more expensive than the other brands, but I think it's really top notch. It's wild and raw. This is like the best brand. It's called Rosita. If people haven't heard of it before, I think it's pretty widely available outside the States as well as in the States. Just make sure that when you take this, that you follow a traditional diet, because you don't want to take cod liver oil, which is high in vitamin A, without supporting your body with a form of vitamin D. So make sure that you eat eggs or something on the vitamin D list along with this. Eggs, shrimp, oily fish, you know, poultry, with in conjunction with the cod liver oil. So you get the A and the D synergy. So that's important, because there's been some foul press about vitamin A. Of course, a lot of it's propaganda, because it has to do with people taking synthetic vitamin A, which is nothing like this raw food-based cod liver oil. This is basically a food in a pill. I think if we're going to be taking supplements, I really have to be micro doses of food, not, you know, supplements like synthetic things. So this, of course, is a whole food supplement, and the other one was a synthetic one. So this is the best one to take for sure. You definitely don't want to be taking anything that is synthetic. And this is an easy way to take it, because it's not going to taste that bad. What about the fermented cod liver oil? I've tried that one before. What's that one called? I forget. Also the fermented skate oil. I've tried that, and I've tried the fermented butter oil. I don't think those are as good. I don't know. I mean, there was a time when I thought that those were okay, but now I think, from what I know, that they're actually rancid. I would lean towards avoiding those. They smell pretty funny. You could also get those in a bottle to take under the tongue. I think they mix them with orange oil or cinnamon oil sometimes, but I would stay away from that. I think the one that I linked, I think that from the searches that I've done with my own research and my own guinea pigging on my own system, I think this is the best one. So I would recommend this one to others. Okay, so vitamin K2. So here's a little bit about a 2014 survey. This is just a little blurb here in this pamphlet. What vegetarians should know. In a 2014 survey, found that compared to meat eaters, vegetarians and vegans have more tooth decay, more allergies, more cancer, more mental illness, more need for medical care, and a lower quality of life. Vitamin B12, needed for red blood cell production, protection from toxins, and for mental health. B12 deficiency can cause paranoia, obsessive compulsive disorder, tendency to irrational anger, and dementia. All animal foods provide B12, but liver is the best source. There is no B12 in plant foods. Vitamin B6. All right, we will be right back. You're getting tired of staring at the same four walls. You're out of your room. Down on the street.
truth really is a revolutionary act these days, which makes it hard to find honest media outlets to call home. If you're looking for a network that tells it like it is and delivers information that is easy to digest, then WTFR is definitely the network for you. If you think you have what it takes to do a live broadcast or even a pre-recorded podcast, contact Sean at DESSNR@hotmail.com and he'll take a look at what you have to offer. Nothing is off the table at WTFR, whether it's the illegal occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan, 9/11, or the truth about the Israeli Mossad. You'll be able to get your information out right here. So what are you waiting for? Email Sean now at DESSNR@hotmail.com.
Make a fool of forget. I saw a ton of bricks that hit me in the head. And watch you too little, baby, I ain't over it yet. Every time I see you make me feel so fine. Heart beating crazy, my blood running wild. Love and make me feel like a mighty, mighty man. Love me, baby, I ain't on your mind. I'm a love-struck baby. Yeah, I'm a love-struck baby. You got me love-struck baby. And I know just what to do.
And we are back. Okay, so I was just talking about nutrient deficiencies from vegetableism. So vitamin B6 is involved in brain function, production of histamine, the storage of carbohydrate as glycogen, and the synthesis of many important compounds. We use the plant form of B6 much less effectively than the animal form. The best sources are muscle meats, seafood, organ meats, and raw milk. And I see here in the chat, Set Free has given us a link for castor oil packs. I've tried this a couple of times, actually. Interesting stuff. I think it has therapeutic value, personally. And it's cost-effective, and one can do this right in the comfort of their home, which is probably the best place to do a lot of things, isn't it? You get to do exactly what you like, exactly what works for you. So, yeah, this is a good thing for someone to have in their toolkit. And here, castor oil can be used for a lot of different things, too, externally, dry skin, fungus, back pain, things like that. I actually, in times past, have made a face wash with castor oil and almond oil as a facial wash. It's very nice. Okay, the next nutrient deficiency from vegetableism is a possibility is zinc. A cofactor in hundreds of enzymes and needed for hormone receptors and production of hormones such as insulin, required for cell production, skin integrity, immunity, digestion, glucose tolerance, high metabolic rate, and sense of taste. Zinc is very difficult to absorb from plant foods. Best source is red meat and shellfish. And of course, like I've mentioned in a couple of prior shows, polyrhachis ant powder. Oh, the MTFHR gene. Yeah, I've heard of it. That's the B vitamin mutation. That seems to be a common gene thing nowadays. Seems like a lot of whites have that, right? I feel like there's a correlation between whites having that gene. I wonder the basis for that, the genesis of that, how that came about. Yeah. Maybe it was from being exposed generationally to toxicity, maybe, and that just kind of like got compounded. Who knows? Maybe in years to come, we'll understand more how mutations happen and how long we've strayed from the right way to eat. Okay, back to the nutrient deficiencies. Iron, needed for red blood cells, energy, and immunity. Iron is best assimilated from liver and red meat. Calcium. Dairy foods are the best source of usable calcium in Western cultures. I would add that fish with the bones. That is typically eaten in more of the Asian areas of the world where dairy is used seldomly or not at all. That would be my preference. One could do something like sardines with the skin and bones. Or one could make a soup, like a bone broth. That's a possibility too. Or there are also some soups that are made where the bones are simmered for so long that they actually become soft and you can eat them. so you can do that too. EPA and DHA, critical for brain function. The best sources are cod liver oil, organ meats, and seafood. Arachidonic acid, critical for healthy cell-to-cell junctures in the skin and intestinal tract, and for life-saving inflammation response, critical for brain function. Best sources are animal fats and organ meats. Amino acids. In principle, the body can make taurine, carnitine, creatine, and carnosine, but production is different in infants and in many adults. These amino acids are critical for many brain function or many functions in the body, including energy and brain function. Best sources are meat, seafood, and organ meat. And Sean is saying, I love sardines. Poor Snoopy, my dog, looked at me the other night and said with his eyes, you're an arsehole. You ate all those and didn't give me one. So I was forced to open another packet and we went halvesies. Yeah, I'm a sardine fan too. I have been for, well, I'd say my whole life, because I grew up with fish really being my primary animal food, with a little bit of eggs, and occasionally we'd be allowed to have a soft serve at the zoo or something like that. But that was pretty much my go-to my whole life, pretty much. So I've always had a soft spot for sardines. They're simple, too. I like them in the oil, and I like them in the water. I like them both ways, with a little bit of red onion and some crackers, and then like a side of maybe a lentil soup or a vegetable soup. That is a good lunch, in my opinion. Okay, and finally, cholesterol. Infants and millions of people with genetic defects cannot make the cholesterol they need for growth, brain function, and mental health. Only animal foods provide cholesterol. And of course, only in the Zoggy Zog world that we live in, you'd go into a store and you'd read on the package, cholesterol free. And they would be like touting it as like a good thing. Whenever they tout something as good, the opposite is true. Obviously. I mean, this is their game. They always tout, they always try to highlight what they're doing to you and make it look like they're helping you. That's kind of like a psychopathic tactic. Okay, so that was the last nutrient right there. Yeah, salmon bones. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. You can do a lot of stuff with that. Make a salmon soup. You can make a salmon loaf. That's a real nice dish right there. You could even start with a tin of wild salmon, and you could mix that up with, you know, breadcrumbs, an egg. If you wanted to maybe go grain free, you could use a little bit of coconut flour or something like that and put that all into a loaf pan. And then you can just slice that and have like a salmon loaf for the whole week. That's great. You know what's actually really awesome in a salmon loaf? If you add 3 hard-boiled eggs throughout the salmon loaf, and then when you slice it, you have like a slice of hard-boiled egg throughout the loaf. Yeah, that's a nice thing to prepare and to have in the fridge. And here is a quote from Dr. Weston A. Price. And he was a racialist, it seems like, from what I can understand. I mean, back in the day, pretty much everyone was a racialist, because everyone was more healthy and normal. It was just normal to not engage in degeneracy. The world around people hadn't been that degraded that people were prone to be thrust into the, you know, the vortex of degeneracy, into the throes of it. So I think people in their natural state are always going to be racialistic. But anyway, here is a quote from Dr. Weston A. Price, where this is where I got some of this information that I have just read to everybody. He was a dentist who practiced in Cleveland in the 1930s, and he traveled to a lot of remote areas of the world, and he took note of people who were still living in primitive conditions, primitive ways. And he actually visited 2 white or 2 European people who were living in a very kind of like remote, that was the word he used, remote living. And those would be the rural Swiss and a Gaelic population, both of which survived eating a lot of seafood, eating a lot of animal foods from the sea, a lot of sea meat. So he went around to all these places and studied the indigenous diet of these, quote, primitive people. And everybody was basically eating the food that was available, prepared in the most nutritious way. And they were eating all foods. They weren't touting about, you know, being the food being free of such and such. They were just engaged in the abundance of what was available. And what he did find is that all of these groups even if they were getting by and eating bugs or grubs or something like that, something really kind of a very crude form of animal food, all of them were eating some type of animal food. Yeah, blood pudding, I'm seeing Set Free saying. A lot of people, that's nutrition for a lot of people. That's how people got salt in their diet back in the day, actually, was from consuming milk, the juice of plants, and blood. So yeah, sometimes people don't like to talk about these things thinking it's icky or it's unsavory, but these are just the facts, essentially. So anyway, here is the quote from Dr. Weston A. Price. As yet, I have not found a single group of primitive racial stock which was building and maintaining excellent bodies by living entirely on plant foods. And supposedly there were some groups of tribes or people who lived on vegetabilism. And I don't know if this was because that's all that was available or they were doing some experiment. I'm assuming, or I hope, that it was done because that's all that was available, but they died out. So of course our enemies would like to push a regime that is a methodology of control. And let's check the chat. Sea meat. I love raw oysters, cooked prawns, scallop, mussels, lobsters, you name it. I am a seafood hound. Yeah, I'm a seafood hound too. I have A2 positive blood and should eat game and seafood. You know, I've been getting into game as of late. This is something actually I wanted to talk about. I think I'll talk about it right now because it's an interesting topic. I've recently gotten into game and seafood. I am of A blood as well myself, A negative actually. But yeah, elk meat is something that I recently have gotten into. I recently found out about it, and I think it's something that agrees with my constitution quite nicely. It's the Nordic stereotype. Well, I am not Nordic myself. I am Sicilian, Hungarian, Irish, and English. So that would make me Hellenic, Celtic, and Uralic, or Hellenic, Uralic, and Celtic. You won't get me near blood pudding unless you want me to add ingredient called barf. Yeah, I've never had that. It doesn't appeal to me. And I'm a rather adventurous one when it comes to trying food. I love to cook. I love to try new food. I love to try things that other people make. I love to travel places and try food. So I'm always in the mood to try something. But the blood pudding would be something that I would not go for. Had a great uncle that cooked an old world style from Germany, England, Isle of Man, etc. Oh yeah, a lot of those places you mentioned, that's part of like the proper breakfast was like the blood sausage from what I know. I have tried some interesting German meats throughout the years, German cold cuts. I think my favorite one was Weitwurst, which is a pork. So I wouldn't eat that now, but that's what I remember from trying that in my life. So yeah, back to elk. I've recently experimented with elk, which is, I guess, considered wild game. I've only had it 3 times so far. I had it in burger form, bunless burger. That's how I do it. I had it in bunless burger form, and then I had it in the form of a ribeye. And I have to say, it was very enjoyable. I think people who like beef or bison would like this and like to try it. I got it from, where did I get it from? U.S. Wellness Meats. I got the first one from there, and the other ones I got from more of a wild game purveyor. But if people don't know about this website, sometimes it's a challenge to be able to get good quality meats close to home. So I find second best is ordering it online. So I just posted right here in the chat, grasslandbeef.com. I do not know if they ship to Australia. Let me just check that out. Well, anyway, this is a U.S. meat purveyor, and they have all different types of meats, and they come frozen to your house. Sometimes they do come fresh. Once a month, they offer a fresh option for certain products. Most of it comes frozen, but this is where I would suggest getting stuff, or this is where I get stuff. So let's just see if they ship. No, unfortunately for anyone in Australia, they only ship to the 50 states, Puerto Rico, and Canada. So sorry about that for you guys, but for anyone here in the States who's listening or in those other areas, check out U.S. Wellness Meats. This is a good company. Let's see what else is going on in the chat. Head cheese. No, never had that either. Never had olive loaf either. Venison. I've had venison, but it's been a very long time for me. But yeah, if you like venison, Lip McNip, you might like the elk. I don't know if you've had the elk before, but I think you might like it. Yeah. I think you might think it was good stuff. I'm part English, Irish, and Aussie larrikin. Is that even a race? Yeah, you're a mixture of a few Europoid sub-races, like most of us are. You know, especially most of us who are of this younger generation. Maybe the ones who are a little bit older are, you know, more just one thing or two things. But especially here in America, most people are at least two or three things or more. I do enjoy some venison. You know, one time I made a venison jerky, and that was probably some of the finest way I had ever prepared it. That was just so good. I dehydrated it too and made my own sauce. That was really good. Yeah, really good stuff. So let's see, back to elk. Let's see what I can say about elk. Is elk meat healthy? So first of all, it's a lot leaner than beef, I guess you'd say, especially for a ribeye, which tends to be like a fattier cut. And at first, like I said, I had it in the burger form. I thought that was really tasty. I just had it with a knife and fork and just ate that with some vegetables on the side, the salad, and I think some soup. It was a very nice meal. So it's high in protein, low in fat, tons of vitamins and minerals. And of course, when you eat wild food, you get the benefits of a more wild product. So it's a good source of zinc, B12, niacin, and B6. And here are some of the benefits. A good source of protein. It aids in weight loss. Helps reduce hunger. Let's see what else. Promotes immune health because of the zinc. Yeah, great source of zinc. Definitely a great source of zinc, which is essential to immune health. Helps prevent anemia if that's an issue. Boosts brain health and strengthens bones. And here are the cuts of how it comes. Sirloin, tenderloin, filet, cube, stew meat, ground, or offal, which is organs. So yeah, definitely something to think about. Bison, as far as I'm concerned, tastes exactly like beef. I think it's, but elk has like a softer, less beefy taste. That's how I would describe it. When I cook the burgers, I did not cook them all the way through. I would recommend that for anyone cooking game, that you, despite even in general, but just especially game, you do not want to cook it all the way through. I use the grill to cook it. That's how I did it. But I put them on the grill and it was really good. What did I do? I mixed in garlic, parsley, and habanero pepper into the elk. And then I grilled it. And then at the very end, I basted it with ghee. And it was really, really good. So yeah, I suggest trying it. I see Lip McNip say, I'm going to try elk. Yeah, give it a try. I think you might enjoy it. Yeah. I've had duck before too. Yeah, duck's interesting. It's like chicken is always the most overutilized poultry, especially here in the States. That's the most popular meat. Most people there who are just following the SAD diet here and probably a lot of other parts of the world, they're pretty much just filling up on low quality processed chicken. I think that's the source. Most people's meat source is just like low quality CAFO chicken, concentrated animal feeding operation chicken. Yeah, buffalo meat is lean. It makes a good chili for sure. Okay, so that's really what I wanted to say about elk. Not too much more, but yeah, definitely something to think about, something to try. It's always, you know, it's nice to try new things. Maybe you don't like it, maybe you do, but I don't know. I always think it's nice to be adventurous with things like this. And it was very, very filling too, the one that I had. Let's see, anything other information I can, just finding a page about a lot of different things to other different meats. Quail I have not had. Ostrich I had once. I had ostrich meatballs many years ago. I found them really dry though. Maybe I just didn't cook them properly, but wasn't really my type of thing. So yeah. Try the elk. There is no gamey flavor either. If anyone's wondering if it tastes gamey, it does not taste gamey in the least. So it's very, I think it's very approachable. Creamed possum, sweet potato, ew. Okay, so all I wanted to say on that. We have about 10 minutes left in the show for this evening. That went by pretty fast, actually. Yeah. So what else can I say for this evening? Looks like a lot of the topics I wanted to get to, we didn't even get a chance to get to because I did all the chatting about other stuff. All right, we'll go over this for the last thing. So here are some dietary advice for balancing mood and balancing emotions and things like that, fighting depression and anxiety, things like that. Just some general tips for people. So one of them, of course, like I've talked about on the broadcast last week, getting enough sleep and rest, aiming for 7 to 9 hours per sleep, even just laying in the bed and deep breathing or something like that, giving oneself a massage, that can be considered rest. And of course, that's done to prevent sleep deprivation, but also can help prevent with fatigue and mood swings and things like that. It can be helpful to stay with a consistent regular sleep-wake cycle to get a normal circadian rhythm, and that can help with feeling your best and not succumbing to depression or anxiety. But it's really important to eat nutrient-dense foods. That's the crux of any wellness plan, any white wellness plan would be eating a nutrient-dense diet. How could you say that you were practicing wellness when you weren't eating nutrient-dense food? You really would be lying to yourself as well as everybody else. Coon, groundhog, squirrel, duck, turtle. Wow, I haven't had any of those. I think I'll pass on most of those. I have had frog legs, though, twice, actually. It's been quite some time. And what's the other one? Snails. I've had snails a couple of times in my life. I had black bean sauce snails at a Chinese eatery. And I had French-style snails with like parsley and butter. A coon here is an abo. Don't eat that. You know where it's been. Yeah, I guess that word, I guess, has a regional connotation then. Because here in America, it usually means a raccoon most of the time. So, yeah. All right, so here are some foods. These are some great foods just to keep one's mood stable. So foods in omega-3 fats help reduce inflammation and support brain function. Frog legs are great food, but frogs are dying off here. Crawfish. Yeah, I had crawfish a couple of times. Not in a while. You don't see it up north much. You really don't. You see mostly just shrimp and lobster, crab for the most part. So foods that are rich in omega-3 will reduce inflammation and support brain function. Foods like wild-caught salmon, mackerel, herring, whitefish, walnuts, natto, fermented soybean and egg yolks. So good sources of omega-3. Fruits and vegetables. Some good fruits and vegetables include asparagus, avocado, beet, broccoli, carrots, and mushrooms. Also blueberries, blackberries, cranberries, and artichokes. Healthy fats or lipids to provide important vitamin and minerals that boost energy levels and mood. The best options are avocado, grass-fed butter, coconut oil. I'm a bigger fan of coconut cream and coconut butter or manna than coconut oil. I think that's the better way to use it. But coconut oil is, you know, okay. But I think those are more flavorful and more nutrient-dense. Extra virgin olive oil, try to get it raw. And walnuts. And, of course, avoiding consuming trans fats like hydrogenated oils, which is hard if you're eating outside the house. And processed vegetable oils, which can promote inflammation. And in a future show, I will devote some time talking about just how dastardly processed vegetable oils are and how dastardly it is to even consume the seeds in quantity that are the base of those oils and how it really isn't so good to have this abundance of omega-6 or polyunsaturated fatty acids in one's diet and how that's one of the reasons why we're in this quote cancer epidemic and obesity epidemic, because people are eating lipids that are completely incompatible with their systems. Another food that is on the list to help balance one's mood is a clean protein source. critical for supporting neurological function and balancing hormones. Those things could include grass-fed beef, of course, elk and venison, things like that can be on the same list. Lentils, wild fish, organic chicken. I would go one better and say pastured chicken, because organic chicken can be fed organic feed while that chicken lived on a CAFO, or a concentrated animal feeding operation. So you really want to get pastured chicken. I know it can be expensive, but like I said, try to stick to the dark meat cuts, or, you know, buy odd cuts, buy you know, the offal and stuff like that if budgeting is an issue. Black beans, yogurt if tolerated, eggs, and raw cheese. Those are all sources. Prebiotic foods that support gut health, cognitive function, and the production of neurotransmitters. And some of those top foods would be kefir, yogurt, miso, raw cheese, and fermented vegetables. A great way to consume probiotics is, yeah, more of that fermented vegetables. Yep. Like kimchi, sauerkraut. A lot of different countries in the world have a signature fermented vegetable. I think somewhere in El Salvador, they have what's called cordito, which is like a cabbage thing. Everyone's got something that's a fermented vegetable that they eat throughout the year. They usually eat it with meats and stuff like that. But that's one of the ways that our ancestors preserved the harvest, was using a traditional food preservation method before we have refrigerators, and that would be fermentation. Drying is another thing that people did back in the day to keep the harvest, you know, to preserve it all. Yeah. Never had penis soup. Oh yeah, they call it roost or something. The only thing about kimchi is that it smells like a pair of socks that have been warm for a month. Yeah, it's harsh. I'm not a massive fan of it. I went through a phase a while ago where I liked it. At one point I was getting a white kimchi that was made with no chilies and just like white daikon radish, and that one was a lot cleaner and nicer. But I'm more of a sauerkraut gal. I've been getting this really good one that is made with caraway and juniper. I love those spices. I kind of like that Scandinavian type of flavor. I really, really like that stuff a lot. It's delicious. And I like having that sometimes, you know, when I'm eating something, whatever I'm eating, it's just nice to have on the side. Chicken gizzards. I've never cooked the gizzard before. I have a couple of recipes for the gizzard, but I've never cooked it. I know that it takes a little while to cook, but that's definitely a budget cut of chicken, would be the chicken gizzard for sure. I eat a mouse before a chicken gizzard. Okay. To each their own, I suppose. Yeah, that's nice that your mom had a gallon crock of cabbage set free. Yeah, that's nice. That's the way it was. People always had, there was always on the rotation with the food, you know? That's how it was back in the day. There was a constant rotation of food. Now we just panic and we're like, what's to eat? But when you're in that constant flow, it never seems like a panic. All right, that's the show for the evening. Good night, everybody.
The basic thesis of Sun Tzu's The Art of War is to try overcome the enemy by wisdom, not by force alone. Sun Tzu believed that a military struggle was not only a competition between military forces, but also a comprehensive conflict embracing politics, economics, military force, and diplomacy. The attitude of Sun Tzu towards war is one of extreme prudence, earnestness, and seriousness. He said, "War is a matter of vital importance to the state, a matter of life or death, the road either to survival or to ruin. Hence, it is imperative that it be studied thoroughly." The Art of War by Sun Tzu.